extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. Oh boy, big show today, guys. Don't blink. Do not blink if you're part of this North American soccer game here, because once week 11 ended, we did a show on Tuesday, then Wednesday happened, then there's Thursday and Friday, then there's the Gold Cup, it goes till August 1st, then there's World Cup qualifying, and then there's MLS all the way to the playoffs. I mean, it's insane. Do your best, but Charlie, you know what? You didn't get the memo, man. Dress code. Dress code, bro. Looks like you just dragged yourself out of bed. That thing is wrinkly.
I am repping my high school, the Brooks School. Are you kidding me? This is what it's all about. Yeah,
Charlie, this is why Charlie has 2 feet on the ground. Exactly. He always remembers his roots.
Yes, typically I'm dressed a little bit, I guess, cleaner, flashier, but this was my mood today. I feel like I needed to rock.
Charlie, with the 18 jobs you do, I'm just glad you're here.
Exactly. Today's all about work. It's all about grinding. Because we have so much to talk about. Yes, there were games last night. Yes, there are games the next two nights. Yes, the Gold Cup is coming up. Yes, we're doing pregame and postgame shows for every single USMNT game. Also, those are going to double as Canadian national team postgame shows, because in Group B, happening at the same time. So you're going to get all
shared love in the group.
Yes, America, America's hat. We're all one. We're all together in this. Also, you can tune in pregame. Let me just get it. Let me get it out there. Let me get the promotional part of this out there. Pregame, Twitter Spaces, Matt Doyle's Twitter profile. You know that's what we do it on. We're going to do a U.S. national team roster, 11 reactions, try to break down the game before it happens. And then postgame, everywhere you normally see us streaming after these U.S. national team games, we'll be there. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. We're going to do that for every single game. It's going to be wall-to-wall coverage throughout the tournament, which starts on Saturday with Group A. Hercules Gomez, you know him well from ESPN. Coming up here, Football Americas. We're going to talk to him about the U.S. national team and El Tri. John Arnold's going to be here as well. You know him from getting CONCACAF. We love to have him in anytime we're talking about the region to go through the stories that maybe you don't know but should know. So basically, we're going to get out of the way as David and him nerd out a little bit on CONCACAF. That should be fun. We're also going to talk MLS. So you've got a new DP, Ake Loba, Nashville. It's official. They've been waiting for like 2.5 years. It's finally done for a big money number, according to Tom Bogert, right under $7 million, says Tom, per sources.
Also, 6.8.
Yeah. I mean, you went exact with me there. I appreciate you. Sounders, record breakers, 13 games unbeaten to start a season. Nobody's ever done that in MLS. Toronto FC, bad. Now maybe better. Got the interim coach.
You just play the Ravs, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, we'll get Charlie's thoughts on that and maybe even Bruce Arena's. And also, I have Malort on ice here because the Chicago Fire have officially won 2 games in a row. Before we dive in here, MLSsoccer.com, the best of the best. I wrote up my takes from Wednesday night. Doyle's got his thoughts on the U.S. national team and the Gold Cup. Leagues Cup, the premier club competition in the world. Details were announced on that one. So we know the Liga MX teams. We already knew the MLS teams. Get ready for that wall-to-wall coverage here on Extra Time. And the call-up, our sister podcast, had Caden Clark. Great interview. Of course, we just saw Jesse Marsh have his introductory press conference in Leipzig. Well, Caden's headed that way in the winter. So we get his thoughts on what's going down and what Jesse has already told him. And without further ado, it is time for everybody who's not a Sounders fan to be absolutely miserable. The producer, producing Anders reminder of the day. I'm just going to read this verbatim. I haven't read it yet. I'm sure it's just awful. Quote, it's a great day to remind everyone the Seattle Sounders are the best team in MLS, and they've now got a record to prove it. 13 games unbeaten to start the season, an all-time mark for MLS. Time to start the Invincibles talk, says Anders with 21 games.
Oh, Anders.
Can I just say what everyone's thinking? And it's the only thing you can, which is you got to be worried about the Sounders because you've done this well without Nico Lodero. So all you can do is mess that up. Do you bring Nico back? Do you get rid of him? Like, if you're in Seattle, you have to be worried right now.
And look, it's not even Nico. You got Jordan Morris. He hasn't been a part of this. What if you bring him back and he throws everything off? And Stephen Fry hasn't really been a part of this either. I mean, the other Stephen Cleveland, he's the one handling that business.
We didn't get that audio. He was on the broadcast yesterday. Made his debut with Steve Zakuani and Keith Gossigan on the call.
Yeah, I mean, look, they don't even need best 11 players. Everybody else is trying to sign him. Sounders are like, we don't need them. Christian Roldan, send him off to the Gold Cup. Make that four best 11 caliber players that we don't need to be the best team in the league. Supporter Shield leaders on 29 points right now. 13 games unbeaten is what we said. It's actually 15 if you go back in the record books because you have to take it back to last year.
19 regular season.
Correct. 19 is the overall record in MLS for unbeaten games in a row. And I think the Crew from 04-05 are the team at the top of that list.
That was post-shootout error?
I believe so. I believe so. What does this say about the job that Brian Schmetzer has done? What does it say about the roster? What does it say about the future? We've been kind of tongue-in-cheek there, but this could get even better, perhaps much better.
So I think the first thing this all says to me is stability and vision matter, in that you've built an infrastructure in this club that can sustain moments like this with injuries because you have long-term planning of how players fit together and long-term planning of, okay, how are we building this club? They didn't go out and sign 32-year-olds DPs just to win now at any point. And so you've built a club where it's not always an emergency to fill in roster spots, and you have a core and you have a spine that you've been able to continue to move along, and then everyone else can fit into that. And obviously, Charlie's up in New England. I think we're seeing something similar with the Revs now as well. And it's like, is Buxa good? Is Buga good right now? It doesn't matter because you have that core, you have that spine. Seattle's the best that's done that in MLS, maybe ever, this group. And that, I think, is what this is a testament to, is that long-term stability that has value, because no matter who's playing on the left wing, you know that Garth and Schmetzer and Adrian Hanauer above them have long-term thought this out and planned for how this club will move forward.
Well, it's also an attractive place to be. That's why Will Bruin comes in. Killen Rowe gets the goal last night. Bring him in. Let's be honest. He hadn't really impacted a team in a while, and now he is doing so. Alex Roldan was able to come up in your system and do this. Jimmy Madronda had kind of been a forgotten man in Kansas City, like couldn't stay healthy. I felt like the trade when they got him was just sort of like, oh, that's interesting, kind of strange, but I should have given Garth more credit. He's been a difference maker when he's been in the team now. Freddy Montero, you're like, is he washed? Is he not washed? He comes back, and let's not say it's a vintage game, but he's really effective next to Raul. Mm-hmm. And then Rui Diaz is just a killer. So you go out and get your DP signings dead on. Like, Jao Paulo is a boss.
Yep.
You know, obviously, Nico Ladero, whenever he comes back, will be, we expect, back to what he has been forever in MLS, which is arguably the best player in the entire league. Like, this is, it's wildly impressive to me that they can do this, missing the caliber of players that other teams just not even, they're dreaming about them. They don't even have those caliber of players to lose and then recover from. And Houston Dynamo are a team around the playoff line. Houston Dynamo are a team that have played toe-to-toe with some good teams in the Western Conference this year. Houston Dynamo got kind of wiped off the field in this one. Like, whether it be the goals, I know it's 2-0 and there was a late one, or expected goals, it was like a two-goal expected goal win, which is a pretty high number. I mean, Seattle Sounders, it just feels inevitable, and it feels like the narrative that they don't start fast is getting wiped away at the same time. Like, this is their year, it feels like, and also because they might get four best 11 players back at the end of this Gold Cup or whenever all these injuries resolve themselves.
It's incredible, and I think You give a ton of credit to the staff, also Schmetzer. I mean, the formation change to start the year, I think it has brought stability to this team. You know, typically you don't know what you were going to get, and you know they always played a defensive type structure, a counterattack, and the beginning of the years usually they struggled, and then they normally turn it on midsummer and came into the playoffs hot. But I love the youth within this team as well. You talk about Danny Leyva. I mean, everyone talked about him being a stud and you know, always standing out for the young generation, the generation Adidas tournaments, but yet now being able to do it with this first team group. Josh Atencio, yep. I mean, that's another one that I'm like, well, they're developing players and bringing them in or putting them in a situation to succeed. So it's not just, I'm going to throw out all these youngsters and then see if they sink or swim, and they're all playing with new. They're putting them next to a Jao Paulo, next to Rui Diaz, like allowing them to thrive in playing with these top players to develop their game. And, you know, Sissoko, another player who just 21 years old, they brought in players who are going to bring energy, and there's a good balance within experience and depth within this team. So Kellen Rowe is a perfect addition, another player they're getting the most out of. So, I mean, kudos to the whole staff, to the organization. I know Anders is loving this. He's soaking it all up.
So,
but so they're just very dialed in to every facet of the game.
And let me add this one piece. I talked to someone in Seattle who was saying in 2015, they felt like they had a good team and it all came together. And I think as a club, when they watched how it came together, there was an understanding of what wins in MLS and a belief that Seattle had that all the time. And so since then, they go into every season and every game with a, well, we know we can be good enough and we know exactly what it takes. So even if they weren't riding high early in seasons, they knew what it would take to get to the point they wanted to in the end. And I think there's just a level of, and we see this all the time around the world, two teams step on a field, one team believes they're going to win. Obviously, everyone thinks they're going to win. But there is an actual belief.
Not. You're playing against Seattle and you are, like, even Minnesota United at this point. You don't think you're going to win.
And Seattle always does, even if they have players injured, yeah. Even if they don't have the roster at the time, even if Jordan's on loan, even if Nico's with the national team or Raul Ruiz Diaz, they genuinely always believe they will. And you're seeing that manifest itself going forward. And for example, I don't know that this team would perform this way, missing the pieces they did in 2014 and 15. But now with the belief and the understanding of what they can do in this league, they are a different team, a different franchise, a different club than they were back then.
And you can't tell me Vancouver stepping on the field thinks we're going to win today, guys.
What? Just,
wow.
I mean, whoa.
Let's be honest here.
Vancouver, Charlie may not have dressed up.
Yes, Vancouver caught a serious stray out of nowhere. That was a Bobby Warshaw stray. What did I do to deserve being in this conversation?
But it's the truth. The truth serum. I got hit with it this morning.
Yeah.
Vancouver, they go on the field and they're like, let's just hope we can get through this 90 minutes.
Oh, man. Right?
It is bad.
Can I ask the stupid question that Anders asked on Twitter and then asked in his producer Anders reminder of the day here, which is what about the Invincibles? Like what kind of I don't think they can do it. They're not going to do it. But what would that accomplishment mean in MLS?
It'd be the greatest season in MLS
absurd.
History. It'd be nuts.
It'd be absolutely nuts because league is set up for everyone to have a chance at winning an MLS Cup. The league is set up that way. There is no chance that they go undefeated. Yeah.
Will one of us
what
guarantee that it won't happen?
A thousand percent.
You're guaranteeing. Say the words.
I guarantee that we will not see an undefeated season from the Seattle Sounders. It's just not going to happen. It's just, to be honest, the odds are in everyone's favor. Seattle Sounders, I am guaranteeing it right now, are not going undefeated. I'd love to see it. It's just not going to happen.
That's a good sign for you, Sounders. That makes it possible. Kevin Garnett, anything is possible. Maybe the Invincibles are possible, but congratulations.
Don't do that. Hey,
top of the supporters.
Hopefully the reverse jinx works. Yeah. Hopefully it works.
13 games this season to start the year. That's a record. Five of our teams had done 12. They're now at 15 overall. Again, the record is 19. Schmetzer called it a mini record. I think that's a good way of putting it. There are more important things to them, but right now everything is clicking for the Sounders. You called this other game here, and we've kind of joked about Toronto a little bit. But hey, that interim coach bump apparently is real. I went back and did the research from the start of the 2018 season. I think there's 11 or 12 teams. What is it? Do the math in my head here. There's 12 teams. 7 wins in the first game after a coach was dismissed. 4 losses, 1 draw. That includes this win by Toronto FC in New England against the second-place team in the Shield standings, the first-place team in the Eastern Conference. Bruce Arena was not impressed. We'll get to that audio in just a little bit. Charlie, I want your take on this because the first 30 minutes are like a dream come true for Toronto FC after they literally laid down and allowed themselves to be humiliated against DC. They found something. They found a little bit of energy. They found a moment of madness from Brad Knighton. And
I was going to say, did they find it or were they gifted that moment?
And you create your own luck, Charlie. Everyone knows that.
Sure. Sure. If you want to take it that way. But I specifically remember texting Goss just before the game. I said, what do you think we're going to see tonight? I was curious to see because I know he loves the upsets. He loves these stories. And he goes, new coach bump, Toronto. Soteldo, Pozuelo, Akinola on the field. Healthy. I said, yes, healthy, but not fit. Well, Soteldo was gifted. Gifted. Everyone dreams of this. A keeper, nah, going to come out. No, I'm not going to come out. And just lets you dribble by him to score, to start the game off. Now, yes, I understand the coach bump. But had New England come out and scored first, do you think that's the performance we get from Toronto? No, absolutely not. They needed something to lift their spirit, to get them back in the game. Of course, they knew they had the talent. Just like you just said, Seattle Sounders, they can be down, they can be out, they can be losing. But within the group, they know how talented they are. Everyone in that locker room, I spoke to a number of players before the game. They know how good they are. They're perennial powerhouses. You look at the players in the locker room in training. Soteldo, Pozuelo, Bradley, Osorio, Akinola, Delgado. Jose Alto are still in purgatory, right? But they have a squad. Richie Larea. They know they're capable, when everyone's healthy and fit, to turn it on and win an MLS Cup. They have the ability. Yet something was massively wrong within that locker room.
Can I just argue that something may still be massively wrong? I mean, they got a gift, yeah, and they got three goals in 30 minutes. Yes. But the last 60 minutes was, in large, yes, part, previous Toronto FC 2021 soccer, which is that they're giving up a ton of chances. They're on the back foot. Pozuelo is still not, as you said, fit, I don't think.
Not even close.
Soteldo is not fully integrated in this team at all. Center back is still a big question mark. They're going to have,
agreed,
a bunch of huge absences for the Gold Cup.
And
this was a moment to be like, oh, thank God it's not worse than it was, which we didn't think it could get worse after six straight losses and your coach getting canned after 11 games. But this, nothing is fixed here.
And no, nothing's fixed.
And none of the goals came out of, well, Javi Perez put them on in possession. They dominated play. It was pattern play and they created chances, right? None of the three goals came out of that. It was a mistake from Knighton, a transition moment with Kamara, and unreal pass from Pozuelo to set that goal up, by the way. Don't care who's marking who. Once that pass goes through, Pozuelo has ripped open your team, and then Endo's goal. So none of even the success came out of, well, this is how Toronto can shift what they're doing now going forward. So even more to your point of, like, it was 90 minutes where it wasn't what we think Toronto should look like, yeah, or should try and look like going forward.
And it's Alex Bono in what, the 94th? Buxa has a chance that probably
hit the crossbar.
Yeah, he probably should finish that one.
Bo hit the post as well, right?
Yes,
Charlie.
Yep.
Like, the XG in the first half was 12-8 on this game. It was absurd on both ends.
Revs just didn't finish, and this also highlighted the importance of a Matt Turner, right? People can say goalkeepers, they don't really change the game. If you have a steady goalkeeper who just doesn't make mistakes, you're okay. You're not going to see a massive drop off. In the Revolution's case, since Matt Turner has taken over as the pronounced starter every game, he has kept the Revolution in the game. He has won them games. He has given them an enormous amount of points. I think the most, actually, of any player, more than Carlos Vela in his MVP season, which is incredible. Also shows Orlando struggling because they don't have Galese.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. You see how much value these strong keepers have. So I think from the Revolution standpoint, yes, you came out in a 4-4-2. The team doesn't even practice in a 4-4-2. You're never going to have success in a 4-4-2 when you're playing Carlos Heel as a right midfielder, because he's naturally going to come inside. You're leaving so much work for Brandon Bae to get up and down. You unbalance the team. And Adam Buxa and Gustavo Bo, there is no partnership yet.
It's oil
and
water.
They need a 10. They need a 10, and that would be Carlos. So there are a lot of things to fix, but with that said, look where the Revolution are on the table.
Yeah, it's all fine right now for them. They don't like this result.
For TFC, I just want to add one thing, because we talk about player kids all the time. The performance maybe has not been there, but when they've gotten wins this year, Luke Singh has been on the field. And I think there's a level of just pure athleticism that matters, mm-hmm, and age with this team. And if Mavinga is healthy, I think you have to find a way to have Luke Singh on the field, whether it's in place of Omar, whether it's just a rotation between the three.
Or would you play three?
Or you play three, which I think is great, especially with Kamar and Richie, if those are your wing backs and you could find ways to set that up. Also, if Josie's not there, then Pasuelo sits in as a two up higher. All of it could work. I just think at some point, because it felt like Chris then was like, okay, now Mavinga's healthy. He's back in the starting lineup and Luke Singh didn't get any minutes. Now he gets forced back into the team. They win again.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you got to look at it and say that there's a causality and causation thing.
I want to throw this out.
I'm going to let you drown there.
Yeah, I want to throw this out there. For this Toronto team to really take it to the next level and not have, you know, this miracle 30-minute start and then park the bus, absolutely park the bus, they need a coach who's going to come in who has gravitas, a coach who has so many accomplishments that you can look at anybody on that roster and say, ah, yes, you've played in World Cups, or yeah, but I've done this, this, and this, or I've coached this and this, and I've won this. So that means nothing. It's my way or no way.
What about
I think that's what they need.
What about a guy who's done it as a player, maybe won the Premier League, Invincibles, won Champions League, World Cups with France, maybe a Thierry Henry?
Would he come back?
I have no idea. Probably not. I don't think it's fun. So.
But I know Laurent Blanc was talked about, and you know, he World Cup winner, has coached in Champions League with Bordeaux, has won a league championship. That's a possibility. I know Patrick Vieira would have been the perfect one. Obviously, he's at Crystal Palace, but they need someone who's going to command respect, who has all these accomplishments, and can really, I think, get this team going, because they need someone like
that. Wait till after the Gold Cup and then get Tata.
Oh, boy. I don't think they'll make a hire this year.
Oh, you won't go there.
I would guess.
Guys, you won't go there.
We'll go there later. We definitely will. By the way, Bruce Arena was in fine form on this one. We have the audio. We're going to play the audio for you. Just in case you don't understand the context on the first, he was asked where Tommy Mack was playing. And that led to this compilation that Anders has so kindly put together for us.
Drop it.
What role? Shakespeare. He was positioned in the central part of midfield to join in with Carlos Heel and play behind our front runners. We didn't go to a 4-2-3-1, just to let you know, regardless. So you don't even have to worry about it. You're becoming a tactical genius. That's not what we were doing. Mediocre. Be honest with you. It's nothing special. And, he's an experienced goalkeeper. We shouldn't be conceding that first goal.
I do enjoy that Bruce just goes straight black tee on the sideline now. He's just straight black tee, just plain black tee. I appreciate that. You know what? I do it the same thing. No sweat stains. Nobody can see if you're, you know, getting a little warm out there. But I have to quibble with Bruce, because Shakespeare is not a role. He is Shakespeare in this. The role would be like Hamlet. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Come on, Bruce. I know you know. You are Shakespeare. You're the one that's writing the script, and then the players are trying to do it. Anyway, the Revs lose this one.
Shakespeare's not even a real person anyway. Move on.
All right. What?
Conspiracies, man. Everyone says it wasn't one person. It was a bunch of people writing under that pseudonym.
Okay. All right. Get the...
they won't, man. Keep your third eye open.
On that note, I got the Milord on ice, as I was saying. Chicago wins at home 3-1 against Orlando City. Their last three results here. 3-3 against Philly, draw. That's a good point. 3-0 over Atlanta, who are missing a ton of starters. 3-1 against Orlando, who are also either missing a ton of starters or didn't start a ton of starters.
Take advantage. It doesn't matter. I think for Chicago Fire, for Rafa Vicky, for the players, I don't care who the other team is missing, who's injured. We need to get results. We need to turn around. We need something. You score three goals, like, I think for the club, it's like, we can have success in this league. We can score goals. The first game of the season, they scored two goals in 15 minutes, and they drew 2-2. So I think Chicago's always been a problem defensively. It's not so much the attacking part of the game. It's the defensive part. It's the transition. For Rafa Vicky, you take these and you try to get that to move you forward and get into a spot where – now all of a sudden we are playing well as a unit and we can get results.
You know, Orlando won the expected goal battle here and had a lot more
of course
chances and quality chances.
But they were also – but so Orlando goes up, I felt, against the run of play. And respect to Chicago that they didn't drop. They continued to play their game. Madron was unreal.
Yeah, Alvaro Madron has been crazy.
It was the best parts – of what they can do. This team can be beautiful and then make mistakes. It's kind of what they did in that first half. They get the late goal to tie it up 1-1. And then the second half, I think, was a more professional performance in closing this out than what we've seen. And then once they go ahead, Orlando's chasing the game. So, of course, they're going to create more opportunities. Orlando also brought Nani off the bench. They brought Pereira off the bench. So they brought...
DK's gone.
So, but they brought that level of energy where they had that push.
Yeah, but they have your boy, Cash Mueller. So
he was on the bench too.
Yeah. They call the SAP announcers, they call him Chris Canelo Mueller, which is hilarious.
Oh, I was like, wait, what?
And now I got it. I've been in Mexico with people who they've called them. Basically, anyone who's like slightly redhead blonde gets called Canelo in Mexico, which is awesome that Cash Mueller got that representation. But I think it was a solid performance from Chicago, and to come back from being down and not to fall apart in any way was huge. And then you look at the way Pineda's played in the middle of that back line without Calvo, and like it has worked. So now you've got questions of how you fit Calvo back in, but until the Gold Cup's over or until he comes back, this is a really good setup for them right now.
Away to Nashville is the next one for them. Home against DC, you of course are rolling here. Home against Toronto, opportunity there. Away to Philly, tough one. Home against NYCFC, home against the Red Bulls, home against Columbus. So there are opportunities there. It's not easy. There's quality opposition. I'm not yet ready to say that like the Fire have turned a corner.
No, absolutely
not. Alvaro Madron has turned a corner for sure. And if they can get some of those other details right, maybe the Fire will too. But they're only 5 points out of the playoffs. That's the beauty of MLS. String a couple of results together and you'll be right there. So congratulations to Fire.
Shout
fan.
Out Bobby Shuttleworth. Bobby Shuttleworth still doing it. Came up with some big saves. He's a great guy. Obviously, he takes care of his body because he's still doing it. So it's always
because he's 100 years old is what Charlie was kind of
saying. Exactly. All right.
Hey, keepers can play through what, 150? So keep it going.
Right? I mean, yeah, fountain of youth here. Quick hits and then we'll get to the Gold Cup here. L.A. knocked off Dallas 3-1, had a bunch of kids playing this game, signed some Los Doses and brought them up. I don't even think he had a full bench, but Kevin Cabral got his first goal. Was a nice one, right-footed finish inside the box. And they looked really good. FC Dallas has a lot of questions that continue to need to be answered. This was not a good night for them. RSL 4, Vancouver. Nothing.
Go ahead.
Zero. Zero. Hey, but Demir Krylak.
Baller.
Two goals. He's the man.
Seven goals. Three assists this season. He is one of the most underrated players in Major League Soccer because Real Salt Lake uses him in almost every single position. Defensive midfield, attacking midfield, an eight, a striker. What I love about him is he's just he gets the game. He understands positions. He has good technique, a good finisher, whether it's the crazy karate kick volleys we've seen him do.
He's got that little like flick on the run too when he gets in behind. That's the first goal. And then the header, that second header, I don't know how he balances himself to get turned and then to bring it back with power. I mean, to beat Hassal, this is a vintage performance that we've seen a ton from Demir Krylak. So congratulations to RSL back above the playoff line. Montreal 2, NYCFC 1. NYCFC mad about some calls in this game. Go check out Instant Replay. I think Charlie and I agree with you that maybe you have a little complaint there. But, Dave, you want to start a award campaign here. For whom?
Fourth place in the Eastern Conference, Wilfred Nancy. You look at what the other two Canadian teams are doing while they're not able to go home. And then you look at Montreal, who I think I picked them last in the East coming into the season, and I think most people were somewhere in that range. Now you're fourth in the East. You've won games. It's not just a winning streak. They've then had tough moments. They've had injuries. They've brought players back. They've continued to perform at a high level. The ideas you can see out there on the field. Outside of Brian Schmetzer, I don't know that anyone's done a better job this year than Wilfred Nancy in his first year as a professional head coach. So he has to be in the Coach of the Year conversation now. And if they continue this way, he's got to be a finalist.
Wilfred Nancy.
Ale, ale, ale.
Wilfred Nancy, Coach of the Year. Siggy Schmidt, Coach of the Year. Love it. Love it. LAFC 2, Austin nothing. That 4-1 win at home for Austin. The good vibes or the Verde vibes or whatever you want to call it. Didn't last that long, but this is a good game.
Yeah, it was awesome. Good game. Like this is what I want from every MLS game. There was energy. The game was open. Obviously, the atmosphere is phenomenal. LAFC are going to open up and play. So if you do it with them, it's going to be fun to watch. It was helter-skelter at times. Austin looked good again. It was that final product. And Cecilio Dominguez sort of gets lost playing as the false nine. And so he's got to come back and get the ball. He doesn't get to run at guys. And then you don't have a finisher on this team. They've brought in a striker. We hope that that's enough for it. We were sort of talking pre-show about some MLS strikers that could be available as well. Some team like Nashville, we're going to talk about their DP center forward. Well, does that mean CJ and Dom are maybe available or Daniel Rios? Like, you just need someone in there so that you could slide Cecilio Dominguez out wide.
That's not the answer.
But I don't know. But if you're not going to find the big answer, there are still pieces where your DP can at least play in a position where he can be successful. But I'm not worried about Austin because you still see the soccer with them and they still feel comfortable with what they're doing.
Are we worried about Minnesota at all? I know the fans up there were having a little bit of a conniption fit last night over the lack of really much of anything from the Loons. But Colorado Rapids, they're going to be mad at us because we didn't start with them. But 2-0 against Minnesota, 1.82 points per game. That's the fifth best in MLS right now.
Brian Galvan breakout game.
Yeah.
They did it without Sam Vines as well, which is big because they've not gotten performances out of left back when he's not there. Shout out to the Rapids.
Yeah, shout out to Ramon Avila for the kidney punch as well. I haven't seen that. That's like sibling rivalry stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what he was doing, how he thought he was going to get away with that. The Zapruder footage is very, very clear. That was a moment of madness.
And to be honest, for Minnesota United fans out there, and I've been ultra critical of Minnesota, I'd say for the past year or so, because I see the talent. You have a phenomenal stadium. You have an incredible president in Chris Wright, who I think he just conveys himself really well, super professional. And they have built a talented roster. You hear Adrian Heath talk about, I need this, I need this, I need this. Well, they get him that. So you would expect them, considering how they've done over the past 2 years of getting into the playoffs, being a team that has put players in a position to succeed, to be at the top of the Western Conference or among the top three always. They are underperforming this year. I mean, you can eventually just talk about how they started this year off getting absolutely walloped by Seattle, even though Seattle are by far the best team in Major League Soccer right now. But they, since May 12th, they've turned it around. They beat Vancouver 1-0. I mean, everyone beats Vancouver, but it's still a start.
Vancouver, man.
And May 15th, they beat Dallas, another team who's struggling, 1-1 Salt Lake, 1-1 Dallas again. They beat Austin 2-0. They beat Portland. They draw against San Jose 2-2. And then Colorado is a loss. So it's only one loss since May 12th. But you look at the teams they're playing, those are struggling teams, right? You're not losing, but you're not winning. And with this group, you should be winning and winning comfortably. I know it's Major League Soccer, it's a competitive league altogether, but you have enough talent to be absolutely blowing teams out of the water.
But in fairness, they started their fourth and fifth string center back in this one, right? I mean, they started Juka Raitala at center back.
Yes.
And I know other teams are missing pieces.
That's a Finland international
for
right
sure.
There.
Right back. Yeah. Finland international right back.
Yeah, but I didn't include
That's also a player who's they signed.
Right? Understood.
They knew what they were getting in signing him. But
no one starts their fifth string center back and looks good.
Then bring sign someone else or play an academy kid. Play someone who's going to have value in the future.
They don't have an academy, so they can't.
I know, but like, but I'm saying play a young player.
Yeah.
Who has a future? Who's going to take a lot from a start like against a Colorado instead of playing a player who's been absolutely thrashed for a couple of years now in Major League Soccer. You know what his upside is? There is no upside.
All right, hey, speaking of upside, though, can I just throw us off here? Get us off the Wednesday night action, go to Thursday, Nashville hosting Atlanta tonight. We're not going to preview the game because obviously you're going to watch the game. It's on ESPN Plus. But Ake Loba, got it done. DP signing in. The transfer windows are open and it's starting to move.
Okay, Nashville.
Hey, yeah, this is the guy they wanted. They've wanted him for a while now. And I think that they feel that he's a perfect fit for MLS and that he can play striker. That's primarily where they see him, I think. He can get in behind. He's goal dangerous. He's not sort of like a guy where you're like, okay, well, it's more about the total package. No, they expect goals from him. And they think that he fits MLS. And they got him, as you said in the beginning, Dave, at a discount to what he was a couple years ago from Monterrey. I think of a guy like Albert Elise, maybe not the exact same profile as a player, but went to Monterrey, didn't have success, goes to Houston Dynamo, absolutely tears up the league for 3 or 4 years. Ake Loba could be that guy, maybe even at another level.
Well, you look at Monterey, and you're talking about like a top 30, 40 club in the world, right? You're not talking about, oh, this is the best team in Mexico. You're talking about an elite squad. And so there are pieces, Zelariana, Tigres, another example, of some of these clubs where they can be elite players. They're just not getting opportunities at that club. And so I think credit to Nashville for sticking with this, not going out and getting a DP that they don't totally want in a panic or a rush because they needed to get someone. Made the playoffs year one. That's a victory, big win. And now they get the player that they wanted, a young player with sell-on value that they think is ready to win now, help them win now in MLS. And I think on top of the finishing, which is huge, his ability to stretch the field and hurt in transition, which is also huge for what they want to do, I actually think he's going to be the best player that they've had at that position if they do control the ball and try and build out, that he can drop in and connect with whoever in that midfield and create chances, which they just don't have as of right now. So I think this is a huge opportunity. And the exciting part about it is because of the way he plays, he could fit with Cadiz. He could fit with CJ. So you have different ways that you can set this all up. It's not, well, Loba's here now. Everything else we've built on the front line is a waste and we have to get rid of all these guys. So I think this is a huge moment for Nashville. And I think it's exciting for all of us in general at the league. Like, this is the type of player. This is why I brought it up for 2 years that I want in this league. Young, up-and-coming players who are already over on this side of the world trying to create their careers, maybe before he goes to Europe or he never goes to Europe, either way. And this is like the perfect position for him to be in.
A little bit of a lesson maybe for, like, you know, we just talked about Austin and their striker situation. And I think they've shown this so far in that maybe patience is a virtue. Like, if you can find ways to sort of elongate your runway, and Nashville did that. They made the playoffs in year one, you know, with guys that we didn't necessarily think were going to be the answer. And I don't think Cadiz is the answer either, but they found a, you know, an efficient, like, cost-effective way to bridge the gap, and then got the guy that they wanted all along, long-term. So now they have that guy. They can start to build around him and around Mukhtar, and hopefully he makes Mukhtar better. But they are slowly rising up the standings, and this is going to be a massive boost. This is the sort of signing that maybe elevates them to a point that they were talking about pre-2021. Which is another step forward from just getting into the playoffs and making a little run of being a team that you think about and say, well, maybe they are a top four team in the West. Maybe they are going to be hosting playoff games from the jump. Maybe they can make an MLS Cup run.
And if they can do the things great that they did last year, which they haven't this year, it gives this player time to settle, right? Because if they're an elite defensive team, then you don't need to be outscoring teams 3 or 4, and you can give him a chance to settle in and still get success. They have not been that team this year, so they need to find that again. But that's kind of an ideal situation for him to come into.
A little bit of that against Philly, though. If they can just stop getting down early, maybe that'll help him out a little bit. Friday, just want to throw this out there. MLS Live on ESPN Plus, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Hell is real. First game of this rivalry.
Not a bad FC one Cincinnati, to close out before
Columbus
the break.
Crew, yeah, TQL Stadium. So get that one. It's going to be a good one. Crew are a little bit walking wounded right now, plus have a ton of absences for Gold Cup. So watch out there. Speaking of, let's get to our Gold Cup preview here. I think we've saved about half the show for it. But just a reminder, we're going to be really going all in on the Gold Cup. We're going to have pregame shows on Twitter Spaces, on Doyle's handle, before every U.S. national team game. So when the lineups come out, go straight to Twitter. We'll be right there going live, talking through every storyline from the match. And then after final whistle, be me, Dave, Doyle, Charlie. I'm not going to say the A team because of the amount of immense respect that I have for Kalen. And Kalen will be around for a couple of those. But it's a solid team. It's a good team to bring you immediate reaction from every U.S. national team game. We'll also talk about Canada too, because they're in Group B. So we'll be able to double dip a little bit. That'll be anywhere you normally see us live streaming, which is like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com, and the MLS app. Let's just jump in. And of course, we have a U.S. focus here, but we'll hit Canada, El Tri, the rest of the competition as well, because there's 16 teams here and there's a lot of incredible stories. Big question to start it, Charlie, and I'll go to you. Do the U.S. have to win the Gold Cup? Is the expectation that they will win? And if they don't, should it be considered a failure?
No, they don't. I know Goss was like, oh, he's going to say, you put on the crest, you have to win. You want to win. The goal is to win. But if you don't win the Gold Cup, that's okay. You want to see spirited performances. A number of these players are given an opportunity to get in the conversation for World Cup qualifiers, to be within the squad. The Nations League was the, we got to get to the final and we got to see how good we are. What this was the litmus test for this group because they haven't really played all together. Now we have an idea. Okay, this is their baseline. We know how good they are. They got that experience they needed. For this Gold Cup, now it's the same thing. You're playing international competition. What does that group look like? How well do they play together? How quick do they play? Jackson Ewell struggled mightily in Nations League. Does Greg Berhalter give him a chance now? Or does he say, all right, now I'm going to give Eric Williamson a chance to see what he can do next to Kellen Acosta, right? And I think that would be a phenomenal partnership. The both players having a good sense of their position, whether to one to push forward and be high to play with those two tens, or to both drop in and sit in front of the back four and protect the back four. So I think for this group, it's just giving them experience, seeing how far they get. I think the expectation is for sure you get into at least the semifinal. I would expect and hope the U.S. plays a final against Mexico, because Mexico's bringing their A team and they're coming in to win. And now they've put all the pressure on themselves to win it. So I think for this U.S. team, you just come in, you're looking for experience, and you're looking to put in some good performances.
I echo everything Charlie says. I think so. The focus of this year was World Cup qualifying, which comes in September. How prepared can you be? But for what's happened over the last 5 years, the U.S. needed to prove that they could win something and that this national team could still be relevant in this region. So they needed to win one thing this summer. They have already done that.
The harder of the two.
Exactly. So if that was your expectations, then they have already accomplished that. I would not have been saying this if they had not won the Nations League. So now you can shift it and say, how do you use this tournament to best prepare yourself for World Cup qualifying? Because with these young players, they'd never won anything. It was fair to say, I needed proof of concept. But you have that proof. So you can't then come out and say, well, they need to win everything. Yeah, great. Every team should go on the field winning. And to Charlie's point, the expectation in the camp should be that they win Gold Cup. But for all of us on the outside, if we start jumping off bridges because they don't, then we are completely misunderstanding what all of this is for. And so there's a lot of keys that you have. You need to find a center back partner for John Anthony Brooks, or a formation with that back line, if it's three or it's two, which now Greg can work on against CONCACAF opponents, which is another huge part of this. Because while we have played some friendlies, we've played a bunch of European teams because of COVID over the last year. So now we're playing the types of teams we will see in World Cup qualifying. How does it fit against that? Who is the six, as you said? What are the fullback options and the depth? Can anyone solidify the center forward spot? We know all these questions. We'll go through all of them. But you cannot just lay the baseline at you need to win this tournament, because you needed to win something this summer and they already did. And so you can't then change it up after they've been able to accomplish that.
By the way, the tournament starts on July 10th, Saturday. El Salvador Curaçao is that opening game. That's at 5 p.m. Eastern. And then Mexico TNT, Trinidad and Tobago, who qualified in this week, comes right after that. And then on Sunday, that's Group B. The U.S. is in that. So is Canada. Canada, Martinique to start at 6:30. And then U.S., Haiti at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Both those games, all the games in Group B at Children's Mercy Park here in Kansas City. I'm trying see if I can't get to that Martinique game, but we'll see if we can make it happen. Either way, of course, we have all the coverage for you. More Canada talk coming up in a second, but here's the checklist, right? We just kind of alluded to it for the U.S. national team. This Gold Cup checklist, and it all goes back to World Cup qualifying. You said it, Dave. You said it, Charlie. And that's in large part because you have those three games in like 7 to 8 day spans where we just know that rotation is going to have to happen. It's impossible not to think that you could stick with the same 11, even like 13 players, and have success in those conditions. So here's the checklist. Let's call it out. A backup six. You mentioned it, Charlie. I want to see Williamson at least get a shot in the midfield. And I would be interested to see him at that six, given what he did when Diego Chara was out. I think he has the physical capabilities and the technical capabilities to be an effective international player, certainly in CONCACAF, TBD outside of that. But let's give him the opportunity.
It's the like 6'8". You know, it's like you're not just a six, because that's Tyler Adams' spot, right? But being next to a Tyler Adams, can you be, if they play with two sixes, or sometimes that eight is dropping a little bit deeper, because in an international game, sometimes you have to be able to drop in deep and absorb that pressure. Then look to counter, look to break. And so the flexibility of when you're playing a weaker CONCACAF team, being a little bit higher and pressing versus playing against a Mexico or Costa Rica on the road or Honduras on the road, and you got to drop in, absorb the pressure, sit in front of the back four. And I think Eric Williamson is capable of doing both.
And you, in World Cup qualifying, you need 3 points from every home game. Obviously, that's a tough thing to say, but that's what qualifies you. Mm-hmm. And this group stage, that's what this is practice for. You're not playing teams in environments where you'll be against the crowd, right? You're not playing Honduras, you know, in New York City. You're not playing El Salvador in DC. You're not playing Mexico in California. Like, this is going to be as close as you get to those World Cup qualifying games where you need 3 points. And when you look at World Cup qualifying windows, you may look at it and say, Tyler needs to start in Honduras. We need Eric Williamson or James Sands or Jackson Yule to then start that middle game against Canada at home. And so they need to be able to do what Charlie's saying, which is be up on those opponents and be able to create chances. That's what you're going to be able to practice in this group stage.
Need center back here, somebody to stand out, somebody to sort of force their way into that conversation, if not just to elevate the guys around them that have already gotten the opportunities. And Miles Robinson and Walker Zimmerman, I think, are two really good candidates for that bring slightly different things.
But I think they both fit the profile necessary next to Brooks, which is, can you attack the ball? Can you be the hunter and let Brooks sort of quarterback everything from behind? You also need someone who has the athleticism to cover.
Yes.
Especially if Dest is going to play left back and Brooks is going to be caught out 1v1. You have to be that second option fairly often if he's isolated against Elise, isolated against Tecatito or Chucky or whoever it is in those big games. And that's the profile of player that I think works alongside him in Germany. And that's what I want for the U.S. Long could do all of it. So it fit. Now with him out, we've seen players who can do one or the other. And I want to see this style of player. And maybe Chris Richards is both. We won't know that going into World Cup qualifying. That would be a risk. One that I would maybe be okay with taking if he's playing all the time. But these two guys, this is their chance. And this is where the level of performance comes from. As Charlie said, they've got a shot. World Cup qualifying is in 3 months. You are going to start in Gold Cup for the U.S. men's national team. Like, this is as obvious as it gets of here's your tryout. You want to see who can rise to that occasion.
And the other one for me is unleash the DK. Give me Daryl DK in competitive matches, exerting himself, being dominant at times, bringing the wingers, whoever they are, we know there's a question mark there, into the game, and then being the guy who makes the right run with the right timing, with the right final touch in the box. I think he has the capability to do all of those things. But we still have to remember that this is new for Daryl DK. Being in this role internationally with the U.S. national team in the middle of an insane moment in his life, let alone career.
Yeah, so but everything's new for Daryl DK.
I know, and he thrives. I know, but he approaches it all with a smile. So that's why I want to see him unleashed. I want to see Greg, who we've called him the striker whisperer in the past, get the most from Daryl DK, because the U.S. national team needs to find a forward that they can get the most from. We have yet to see that across the board. So this could be Daryl DK's moment. I also think, just to throw another name, I think this could be Paul Areola's moment too.
Yeah, I would agree.
To force his way back into the team, because he's another one of those guys in CONCACAF, in World Cup qualifying, who has the experience, you know what you're going to get, you have work rate, and you have more final product than people give him credit for.
No, I think he's going to be huge in World Cup qualifying because of the what you get from the fullbacks, which is another one, by the way, that I think this is a big tournament for. I don't think Reggie has established himself the way I would like at that right back position, if Dest is the starting left back for this team, which it seems like he is. And so I think that's a spot that he needs to either lock down, or that's an opening for other guys to push into. It's interesting that Shaq Moore is on this team. We haven't seen him in a while. But clearly, if you're going to bring him into this from Europe, one of the few players you're bringing from Europe, that means that he's in that depth chart and an option.
Left back to me as well. What can Sam Vines do? Can George Bello force his way into the conversation? I think there's an opening here for a left back who primarily defends, let's put it that way, for certain instances, certain game states, certain matchups in CONCACAF. And Vines can be that guy, I think. So some questions for the U.S. We will get to Hercules Gomez in just a second. Before we do, though, Canada. We kind of had this big picture for the U.S. What do they expect? Well, for Canada, what did we expect from them? What should they expect out of this Group B that is looking increasingly difficult as Haiti forced their way in? Another wild card, but Canada fans don't need to be reminded what Haiti can do in the Gold Cup when they're underdogs.
But they just beat them 3 weeks ago in World Cup qualifying, right?
True.
So you should have the belief as a group that you can be better than them. I think if I'm Canada, I for sure want to see that back line continue to grow. Was Scott Kennedy a really great Band-Aid that worked out for 3-4 games? Or is he the option at center back? Danielle Henry did not look good in World Cup qualifying, but hadn't played with this group in a year and a half and came back from Korea, which is a tough trip. So is he still that guy that was the best center back in the pool? And Kamal Miller wasn't healthy. So those are your three guys where if that all fits, man, this is a different team in World Cup qualifying. If the question mark still exists in 3 weeks, then that's a little bit tough for Canada. And then I think the other ones are the young guys. This is a huge month for Tejan. Like, he's killing it right now with the Revs. He was good in Olympic qualifying. If that European move is going to happen for him, sorry, Charlie, I think he's a guy who can crush it for Canada, similar to Alphonso Davies in his first Gold Cup, and can push himself, you know, in that direction. And I think Theo Corbino is one of those players who can be a difference maker in World Cup qualifying. Now let's see him get some minutes so that he can start to push himself into first team minutes in Europe.
I'm curious.
I just think that for me, the Canadian team attacking wise is so dangerous. So many quality players, right? Jonathan David, Kyle.
Not there for this one. Not there.
I know,
for this
but
one.
I'm saying in general.
Oh yeah.
Defensively, they struggle and they're weak, and everybody in CONCACAF knows that. So that's where they're going to need to improve tremendously if they want to have any type of shot at qualifying for this World Cup. So defensively is really what I'd be working on if I'm the coach. How do we get this team to defend as a unit? Because individually, we're not good enough. We are not good enough individually to defend and get results in CONCACAF. But if we do it as a team, we could.
I think it would be a disappointment for Canada not to reach at least the semifinals. They have the best player in the whole tournament in Alphonso Davies. They have the best center forward, I think, in the tournament in Kyle Larin. Yes, they have questions on the back line, but to get to the semis, I think should be the bare minimum goal for them, especially as they try to build the confidence that they'll need and the results that they'll need and the consistency that they'll need to accomplish what ultimately is the goal, which is to go to the World Cup before they host the thing.
And I would argue the way it lines up, Martinique first, Haiti second, U.S. third, you should put yourself in a place where you know what you need game three. And you know, do you need to go for the win to try and win the group? Does the U.S. drop points? And then you can play for a draw potentially. That's set up as well as it can be. If you don't win the group and you come in probably against Jamaica in the next round, that's a really tough game. And that's a tough situation. So I think a lot of work of that needs to be done in the group. But again, this is a team that could beat a Jamaica on their day, especially the roster that Jamaica is bringing. And then you move on and then you're on your way to semifinal, which I think is a fair expectation for this group. The only thing I would say is I'd be surprised if Alphonso Davies is there the whole tournament. So I think that will affect where they go. But outside of Jonathan David, everyone else is here, and that should be a team that's good enough.
They're dreaming of 2000, right? Why not?
Ooh.
Why not Canada? Why not? All right.
Here's one last one with them. Charlie was right. The attack's awesome. Jonathan David's a starter, 100%. Kyle Larin right now probably has established himself. But Cavallini and Io are on that roster now. They're probably going to start two of them up top together. This is a huge chance to see, one, can Io play at this level? And two, can someone else maybe push Kyle Larin? Or with these three, you know, games in a window, you're going to need to rotate. Who's that center forward depth? Because they have awesome depth. It's just now establishing yourself in there.
All right, let's get to Hercules Gomez. You know him from Football Americas at ESPN. He does so much great work. We always love chatting with him. Herc, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. I feel privileged.
Do you really? It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're all Football Americas fans here. Just throwing it out there, ESPN Plus. Go check out Herc, Sebi Salazar doing their thing twice a week. It's weird. It's like you guys would at the exact same time we release our show. I don't know how to feel about that, but I'm gonna allow it for now.
This is all on demand. I thought this was the first day of the first show for you. You guys have been going on?
No, you haven't been listening ever for
no. We've had this discussion before. We actually wanted to take your name and you guys already had it. So we went with Willa Medica's. We'll stick with it.
Yeah, we're the originals here. Dave, you got heat, man. Bring it.
Herc, I just need you to explain something to me.
Oh, gosh.
Why? What is the value? What is the point of Tata Martino and anyone around FMF talking about the U.S. not bringing their best team to the Gold Cup? Because in my mind, this only goes two ways. You win, and it's like, of course, the U.S. brought a bad team. Or you lose, and now you've lost twice in the same summer, and you lost to a B team that you specifically called out as a B team.
Correct. You're bringing the heat already. All right. It's a great point you bring up, because they're doing themselves a huge disservice. One, it's not a B team. It's more like a C team. So if they lose, they lost to a C team. And two, you're only increasing the pressure on yourself, because you guys know Greg Berhalter and the U.S. men's national team don't win this tournament. Nothing happens. They've taken a weaker side. They're looking for different things. They're looking for maybe, I don't know, just throw out a number. Position seven.
Left back.
Right. They're like seven positions that could be left for fringe players to go to Qatar. Well, Tata Martino's playing for his job. He loses against the U.S. men's national team. This U.S. men's national team, a second final lost, they're not going to forgive him. With already calling up Funes Mori, Rogelio Funes Mori, and we can get into that later if you guys want. But it's opened up a can of worms for the first time in a long time, because he started out with a great track record of being disciplined with players and saying the right things to the press and winning, which cures all. He's not winning. There are clear and evident tactical problems. All of a sudden, they're very weak on set pieces. All of a sudden, there's player indisciplines. There's talk about who actually runs the locker room and who makes decisions. Is it the federation? Is it the players? Is it Tata Martino? So it's just one after the other. And what you should not be doing is talking about the opponent. You should be talking about your team. Mexico is always obligated to win the Gold Cup. That's cultural. It has nothing to do with the level of the team or the level of the opponent. It's the culture. Mexico plays, a whole country is paralyzed. Everybody watches the Mexican national team. There is more pressure on the Mexican national team coach and the general public than the president of the Mexican Republic. It's just the way it is.
That's serious. So walk us into the behind the scenes here, because on our podcast here, we're talking about Chicharito all the time because we're covered MLS back to front. And we're wondering, why doesn't Tata at least give him a shot? He doesn't have a ton of options. And now Funes Mori comes in and gets naturalized, and he is the option, it seems. What are the weak spots of the squad, and what's this behind the scenes you're talking about with Funes Mori?
So behind the scenes with Funes Mori is there's a very xenophobic way of thinking where naturalized players aren't accepted into the Mexican national team. Same type of premise as what is Chivas de Guadalajara. We want Mexican players. We want Mexican-born, Mexican-formed. Even of Mexican parents are very taboo when it comes to the Mexican national team. They are very prideful in that aspect. So even though Rogelio Funes Mori has been in Mexico for like 5-6 years and he got there and he was 22, 23, and when you guys were 22, 23, you weren't formed as people. You didn't have the ideals you have now, the way of thinking you have now. I'm sure you've matured and things have gotten, your perspective has changed. So his upbringing has been completely Mexican, but they don't see it that way. They see a player trying to take advantage of a situation where now he has a Mexican passport and he's not good enough in their eyes to play for the Argentine national team. So I would choose Mexico in an effort to play in a World Cup. That's what they see. So that's the can of worms with Rogelio Funes Mori. As far as Javier Hernandez, it's Raul Jimenez. We wouldn't be having the Javier Hernandez Chicharito conversation if Raul Jimenez back in November didn't have his unfortunate injury, that accident that's left them not playing since the 20th of November with David Luiz, that head-to-head collision, Wolverhampton versus Arsenal. Since then, not only has he not played, but there are serious doubts or have been doubts about his health and future as an athlete. He just got the green light to come back to what is participation. Now, you guys have seen, I'm sure, Charlie, you've got fellow colleagues, ex-teammates that have gone through this type of injury. I have a bunch. It's not the easiest of things. I have friends to this day that have been retired for years that can't go jogging, can't get their heart rate above a certain, you know, BPM, because it brings on a sort of feeling to them with their equilibrium, with their head, whatever it may be, that they don't feel well. They can't have like a normal everyday activity or everyday life like you and I can. Mm-hmm. Well, Raul Jimenez is going to go through that. He's going to see what the process is like trying to get back from that injury. So if he's not injured, Javier Hernandez isn't even in the picture. But because he's not, you have to rely on what is Alan Pulido, who has, I believe, one goal for the Mexican national team since 2014. You have Henry Martin, who has two goals, scored his second for the Mexican national team like a week ago since, four or five years ago.
He's not the guy, I can tell you that.
He's not the guy. You have JJ Macias, who wasn't even participating regularly. It was the Olympic team. You can say that's injury. You can say that's form, whatever it may be. But you start going down the list and you start to get worried. All of a sudden, you have to put in Chucky Lozano, Irving Lozano in the number nine spot because he's your only constant threat. And you have tactical problems with your team such that Tata Martino went to a line of five or a three center back line in the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal against Honduras. And you saw a player like Uriel Antuna playing on the right-hand side as a wingback who's never played there because he's grasping at straws, trying to move the team around, trying to see what fits, what works to get Chucky Lozano in a position to score goals because Raul Jimenez is not there and he's so vital to that. That's why we have the Javier Hernandez story. Now, Javier Hernandez, to a lot of his own fault as well, has caused a lot of this. Javier Hernandez had disciplinary issues. In one of the last trips he was part of with the Mexican national team in the U.S., disciplinary issues that caused a person in the Mexican Federation that worked with the Mexican national team to lose their job. And then there are also discussions about a fallout with team members, Guillermo Ochoa and Andres Guardado, about him trying to improve the working conditions, contractual conditions in the CBA or lack thereof with Mexican national team and how the Federation took that the wrong way and how he's blacklisted. So there's a bunch of things going around. And here's the worst part. Tata Martino says there's nothing going on. Tata Martino is leading us to believe it's all sporting decisions. And that's why we are here.
So let me ask you this. I've been in this conversation all the time. I'm sure you have this conversation five times a day. Everyone talked about the U.S. for the last 5 years. The national team's a mess. There's no generation. There's no talent. Everyone's over that now, right? These kids are so good. The golden generation coming. When you look at this Mexico team, there is some legitimate talent. It doesn't feel like that next generation is pushing through as hard. What's your feeling of not just this Gold Cup, but what the future feels like for El Tri?
So they're a must-win now team. You look at their players, a lot of those players aren't going to be around come 2026. Because we talk about the U.S. men's national team as 2026 is the bar. That's when you can realistically do some damage. 2022 is a learning process. Let's see if they can get out the group and maybe go on a run, right? It feels like this team...
get to the World Cup first.
Well, yeah, but that, honestly, I think in most people's mind, that should be a given considering the talent, right? Considering the new format, considering how much more difficult it will be for a team like Mexico or the U.S. men's national team not to make it to the World Cup. But I agree with your sentiment. Like, let's not count our chickens yet, you know, like get to the World Cup first. Mexico's not in that situation. We have to compete today because that's cultural. And two, because Raul Jimenez will be later in his 30s. Javier Hernandez will be later in his 30s. Guillermo Ochoa should be completely out of the picture by 2026. Hector Moreno, Andres Guardado might not even make it to 2022. He may be a sentimental pick for Mexican Federation like Rafa Márquez was in 2018. There are a bunch of players, a bunch of question marks all over the field where you're like, my best team are essentially in their prime or going past it today. We need to win today. And if you look at the crop below them, sure, they dominated the Olympic qualifying process in Guadalajara. But most people don't know is Mexico is a world power at the youth level because they have teams at the youth level that act like club teams. I mean, these players are together for 2-3 years at a time, and they play. If you look at the amount of games the U.S. men's youth and men's national team under 23 have played compared to the Mexican youth 23, what they've played, it's not even close. I mean, we're talking about over 18 games for the Mexican side and maybe like two in the same 2-year process for the U23s on the U.S. side. They do this on all levels.
Don't even talk about the U.S. under 23s.
So what I'm saying, and Charlie, you know this, Charlie, when you go to a national team, not only is it difficult for the national team coach in 3-4 days to say, you know what, we're going to go from a 4-man back line to a 3-man back line, and this is the reason why. So get comfortable, get suited, get acclimated. It's going to be very difficult. Now, that process is difficult already. When you have a team that acts like a club team, it gets easier.
Yeah.
And they have a leg up on everybody. And especially when they're already more of a powerful team in terms of forming players. So they will be good at a CONCACAF level. But look at the players. They're not exporting players. Not at the rate that the U.S. men's national team are exporting. Not even at the rate that Canada is exporting. Or, you know, that rate, if I'm being honest. I mean, Orbelin Pineda is rumored to go Celta de Vigo, and that should be a possibility. But he's well within his, mid-20s now. That should have happened 4 or 5 years ago. Whereas it seems like every single day we hear about another homegrown or another player in the States that's leaving before he's 20 years old to Europe.
Is there any panic around that? Because we joke around and we talk on the show about like Efra and Ricardo, Pepe and Julian Araujo, and we're like, uh-oh, is this...
Efraín Álvarez, Julian Araujo, Ricardo Pepe, these players aren't even on their radar. They're not in the general public, and this is a soccer-crazy, football-crazy culture, not on the radar. They don't know anything about Efra. All they know right now about Efra is Efra's the Mexican-American kid that Chivas is going to go after. That's all they know about. They don't know who Julian Araujo is. They couldn't tell you Ricardo Pepe or what that he's got Franco Jara on the bench. You know, they can't tell you any of that because they think the product they have is superior and will always be superior. And their mindset is, you may be exporting all these players, but what happens? Our domestic league is better and our national team is better right now. That's the mindset, and that will continue to be the mindset until they slip within CONCACAF.
They sure could use Carlos Vela, I'll tell you that right now.
I'll tell you what, there are a lot of teams that could use Carlos Vela, but Carlos Vela, Carlos Vela doesn't want to be used. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know? And in Carlos Vela, you have a player with so much talent, but they see as a Giovanni Dos Santos type player, an unfulfilled promise. Even though Gio Dos Santos has an arguable case of being the most, I don't want to say influential, but the winningest player in national team history. If you look at all the levels, U17 World Cups, U20, again, they made it to the semis of the tournament, U23 gold, you know, gold medal, gold cups, Confederations Cup, scored in World Cups, multiple World Cups he's played in. One after the other, he's easily the winningest Mexican national team player. In a pool of players like Hugo Sanchez, Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Rafa Márquez, Javier Hernández, who's the all-time leading goal scorer, Javier Ugueti, the list goes on and on. I can make a case about him being the best national team player ever in terms of winning. And they see him as an unfulfilled promise. That's what they see in Carlos Vela. So it's these are polemic figures you guys bring up, but Carlos Vela to me is one of the most talented players I've seen come out of CONCACAF. At least in my generation that I've gotten to witness play, that I don't have to Google, I don't have to YouTube to watch his videos. What he does, how smart he is, how much better he can make a team. Few players have that impact, but he don't want that.
No, he's not about it. All right, let's keep it the here and now and let you go, Herc. Will Mexico win this tournament?
Yes, they should win this tournament.
Now, will they? Not that they should. Yes. Will they?
Yes, they will, because Gold Cup is very familiar to them. If this was a World Cup, I'd have my doubts. If this was a Copa America, I'd have my doubts. But Gold Cup
or versus, Nations League.
Or Nations League. Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. If you look at think about what had to happen for the U.S. men's national team to win that game. I mean, it was like almost what had to happen for the U.S. men's national team not to qualify for the World Cup in 2018. Like everything aligned. I think the SPI here at ESPN gave the U.S. men's national team a 3% chance of not qualifying to what was a World Cup, even if they lost versus Trinidad. You still had to have Mexico, who was undefeated that whole World Cup process, lose to Honduras. You had to have Panama and Costa Rica, that result go your way. So you had to have this Mexican team play one of their worst games, get scored on three multiple dead ball situations. you had to have the U.S. men's national team not play well, yet Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, and Gio Reyna all score goals, and your backup goalkeeper who comes on for the starting goalkeeper stop a PK in the dying minutes for a walk-off in front of his hometown fans. Like, it just seems like it was meant to be type of situation, right? Well, with Mexico and what is the Gold Cup, the U.S. men's national team bringing the team they're bringing, Canada still being a work in process, us not really not knowing what we're going to get out of Jamaica and all the dual citizens they have, Curaçao, what can they do? You know, El Salvador, the interesting project Hugo Perez has going on. It's Mexico's A-team. And if you look at the Trident up top, you've got Chucky Lozano on one side, Tecatito Corona on the other, and you got Rogelio Funes Mori, who's the all-time leading goal scorer for Rayados, in the center. And then you have experience all over the team. And then you have depth. So, and you have Tata, who's a great coach. I just don't see how they can lose this. I think Greg bought himself a lot of time with the final.
So you're saying there's a 3% chance, Herc. The U.S. can do this, baby. Let's go. Align it all. Hercules Gomez.
I'll just say this. We're thinking of starting a lower division team for ETR. We'll call Tata in a month if he's available.
Give us an MLS 2 team.
If there's a 3% chance and he's available, he can come join us.
I tell you what, people see Tata, and rightfully so, as this great coaching figure. What he did in Atlanta, where he's been in Barcelona, how he came out of Newell's, Paraguay, and the great teams he had there. This could be his hardest challenge, because I'm sure if you ask him off air, he won't believe the amount of pressure he has on him for the zone he's in and for the team he has. But he could realistically be out of a job if they don't win this Gold Cup.
Pressure is on. Hercules Gomez, Football Americas. Follow him on Twitter. Always enjoy chatting, Herc.
Yeah, man.
Get that scarf up right. There you go. Get the branding.
Oh, extra time. I love that extra time scarf.
that. All right, let's get to John Arnold. Let's get CONCACAF'd. All right, big thanks to Herc Gomez for joining us here. And now it is time to get CONCACAF'd. If you're not a paying subscriber to this newsletter of niche regional soccer minutia, you're really missing out. You're really missing out. I cannot wait to get emails from John Arnold from getting CONCACAF'd. Arnold, John on Twitter. You know him well from this show. Always love him. John, what's up, man? Where's your hair?
Yeah, it was time for a cut. I mean, you know, I think one of the great things about this Gold Cup coming up is we're all kind of emerging. It's going to be beautiful to commune in the stadium again. And I couldn't be communing with that long hair. You know, it's a great look for some people. It worked for me for a while, but it's time to go back to the roots.
All right, it was a hot summer, man. Didn't want to be in the press box with the main. I feel you. All right, we are coming to you, and I'm probably just going to let you and Dave have the floor here. Charlie and I can just observe and enjoy the three best under-the-radar stories of the 2021 Gold Cup. What's atop your list, man?
I think the first story has to be Suriname making the Gold Cup for the first time since it's been named the Gold Cup. They made two continental championships back before the Gold Cup branding, before people that maybe we don't want to name came up with the idea for this tournament to work the way that it works. But Suriname is a fantastic story, not only because of that return and sort of the glory days that they had in the 80s, but also because of the fact that I don't think a lot of people have realized how this change has come about. Everyone, I think, seems to register that they've kind of recruited a lot of players. They've got a lot of guys who were born maybe in the Netherlands, born in other countries. But the fact is that this has been facilitated because of political change in Suriname. It was already starting to change as Desi Bouterse, I believe is how you say his name, was still in office. But that president, longtime president, there are other less nice words for him, was voted out recently. And that's kind of allowed this change for athletes to have a Surinamese passport. Previously, if you had a Dutch passport, if you had some other passport, you can't do it. You can't suit up for the national team. So now that these athletes are being able to get these passports and represent Suriname, a lot of the guys were born there. A lot of guys have, you know, heard stories from parents or grandparents. There's like family connections with Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink's nephew, Nigel, in the team. Other people whose fathers or grandfathers played for Suriname or played football as well. It's just a really nice story. And look, you know, they weren't as incisive as they hoped to be, certainly against Canada on that last day of World Cup qualification. But they're also not a bad team. And when you look at the group they're in, there's a decent chance they'll compete to get it out of the group into the knockout stage. I think it's exciting to see Suriname back.
And when you watch the Canada game, you were looking at a team where most of those guys had never played before together. Like, it wasn't just, oh, the talent's sort of new and we're figuring it out. Literally, they had not played earlier rounds. A lot of the talent that is exciting that's come into the team. So this is a brand new team. So what's exciting, I think, for me is, okay, now they get a chance to train a little bit and come into this tournament. You got a minimum of 3 games. You look at the talent. You're talking about guys who start for Galatasaray, Roland Alberg, who everyone knows for what he did from Philly, Kelvin Leerdam. You're talking about legitimate talent that could be some of the better in CONCACAF. And so that's what exciting is. Okay, you got the names down. It didn't work out in World Cup qualifying. It was too late, probably. What can this build to be? Because then you start to keep bringing guys in, or you can recruit the next, like for Curaçao. Their success in the last Gold Cup has allowed them to recruit the next generation of players for longer term. So I agree with you. This is my most exciting story. And I think there's going to be some really good soccer that they're going to play.
It's fascinating where these guys are coming from, by the way, on the club side. It's from literally all over the world. I did not realize that Roland Alberg
is playing for Hyderabad.
Yeah, Hyderabad. Yeah. And then you've got, look, this might be the best center back name of all time, the captain, Ryan Donk. That's incredible.
Yeah,
that's beautiful stuff.
He's a good, I mean, he was a talented.
Do you know him from France?
I knew him actually before that when we were playing against the Netherlands in Olympic tune-up tournament. And so getting a chance to hang out with a number of those guys, Ryan Babel, Donk, Evander Snow, great guys. Everyone had, you know, some good banter, but they were part of a generation that really had a ton of quality. And so you see that with Haiti, you see that with Suriname, Curaçao. There are a lot of players who play in the Netherlands, in France, who, you know, their roots go back to Haiti, go back to Suriname, Curaçao, that if they're not going to get the opportunity at 22, 23, 24 to play with their, with those top countries, then go play for Suriname or Curaçao and represent your country.
So, and this is the part, to John's point, explaining it all, it was self-imposed from Suriname. It wasn't externally exposed where, oh, FIFA didn't allow switches, any of that, which is why they could be a continuous threat going forward. Because now they've opened up these doors. The players wanted to play. And you mentioned Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, Clarence Seedorf, Edgar Davids, Clivert. They probably wouldn't have, but these are the players that would have been available to Suriname if they had
not.
Anyway, they're in Group C. It's going to be fascinating to see how they do back at the Gold Cup here. Costa Rica, Jamaica, Suriname, and Guadeloupe are in that group. All right, story number two, John, CONCACAF us.
I think the second most kind of intriguing story is Haiti. Haiti is a team that made the 2019 Gold Cup semifinal. They pushed Mexico to extra time. It was a really united group. They had a lot of fun. As Charlie kind of alluded to, there was a lot of diversity in the group. And as far as backgrounds, you had kind of a contingent that was born in North America, raised and eligible because of Haitian background. There was a contingent that was kind of from France, and then a contingent from the island. And so you had these kind of groups mixing together. I was able to go to several training sessions. The linguistic sort of blend was quite fascinating because you did get the French, you get the Haitian Creole, and you get English. And so you kind of have guys kind of making it work, figuring it out. But the team spirit was so high during that run in 2019 that you expected it almost to work on the field. We saw that in the Rose rally that they had against Canada in the quarterfinal, where I think Canada went into the locker room up 2-0, ended up losing 3-2 in regular time. I'm not sure that this Haiti team can replicate what the previous Haiti team did. Marc Collard, the manager, is gone. Now it's a much younger manager, for a player, Jean-Jacques Vierre. And also you have a country that, look, sadly, Haiti, as long as we've been alive, has always been in a bit of political turmoil. But obviously, if people didn't see the news, president assassinated yesterday, already was in a difficult situation. I think we covered, maybe even on the show before, Belize's players getting held up at gunpoint when they were there for a World Cup qualifier. International club games not able to be played in Haiti right now because of violence at previous matches. How the players kind of cope with all that and how they see themselves, because what you're representing with this turmoil can be quite important, right? So I think that will be something absolutely to watch. And that's why this Haiti team, after coming through Gold Cup qualification, is a pretty fascinating one to me.
And Miami's always a great spot for them. But the atmosphere, I think, in the stadium you saw for the preliminary was that, like, this is a release and a moment of national pride for everyone around this national team. I was at the game when they qualified out of the group, I think in 2015 Gold Cup at Red Bull Arena. And like, or maybe 2017, that would make more sense. And the party outside the stadium was one of the best I've ever been around. Derek Etienne Jr. just doing laps around the field, taking pictures, clapping, smiling. So there's a ton of potential here. I really like some of the pieces in this team. I was actually a little let down by the way they performed in World Cup qualifying. I thought this was a team coming out of 2017 that would grow in their style. And obviously it's tough with how much you can be together. They felt like a team that couldn't play both ways. If they defended well, they defended as a group, they weren't dangerous going forward. And then against Canada, they tried to open it up and create chances, and they got hit on the counter kind of in soft ways.
I think it's also worth pointing out that, you know, Johnny Placé, the goalkeeper who has been so strong, he was quite frustrated because he couldn't get into the U.S. because of administrative issues that Haiti didn't figure out, I guess, or didn't research closely enough when he needed to leave France to then get into the United States with the COVID protocols. He's missing. Some other regulars are missing. But that said, I do think it's a team where, like you're alluding to, Dave, I think if they can put it to, they can put it together, if they can play a complete game, if they can figure out how to link those phases of the game, I think it could be still a dangerous team. I think when you look at the back, they have, you know, Jamgef, or like a guy who's been their center back for quite some time. They have good defenders. They have really good attackers. I think it's really going to fall on the midfielders to link that play, because they do sometimes feel like, you know, I don't even know how to describe it, almost an NBA team. It goes to one end, they take an opportunity, and it goes to the other end, and they're defending. But where's that linking play?
That's
where's
called that Liga MX.
Yeah, it's called the Liga MX game. Yeah.
Well, it's no coincidence that I'm picking this as one of my most intriguing stories and intriguing teams to watch, right? So, no, I think, you know, and look, like Brian Alcaez, like, should be that guy in the midfield. He's a good player, but, like, is he going to do it? We haven't really seen it at the national level. Like you said, Dave, I think they disappointed a bit in qualification, even getting into the second round. But against Canada, you know, not much was happening.
I'm asking for a favor out there. Find me a link to purchase the warm-up jackets that the coaching staff is wearing for Haiti. The jersey is nice. I don't really wear jerseys, but I would wear that jacket every day of the week with the confetti and the blue and red. So please, someone out there, just show me where to find it, because I couldn't find it on the website.
Beggar.
I didn't tell them to send it to me, Weedy. That's your job. But
come on, you implied it.
I just said send me a link.
You implied it. That's
true.
Somebody's got it. Send it to him. Send that thing.
Is there a player for you that has yet to be discovered that we're going to find throughout this CONCACAF group stage and say, okay, this player is either making that jump to MLS because of the opportunity, or possibly Europe?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys who could pop out, but it's, you know, there's guys who we've been watching in CONCACAF for some time. The Nations League and having more matches, Gold Cup qualification now that we have that stage, I think have sort of taken some of those guys off the map. Every time that we see the Gold Cup specifically, I'm always surprised by the teams that are not affiliated with FIFA. So we've got Guadeloupe and French Guiana. And I think when you watch that shootout from Guadeloupe to get past Guatemala, some of the guys had really nice showings. And you look at the clubs they play in, some of them in France, but a lot of them are in, you know, the domestic league. I think that's where MLS could potentially, you know, they had the Caribbean Combine a few years back where there were some players discovered who are still in the mix. So that's where I would look for some of those undiscovered gems, because I think a lot of the guys, luckily and gladly, we're seeing more of and able to actually scout and have footage on. And MLS teams have done a good job, actually, in the last couple of years of that.
Come on, John. Cleofilter Viter. Come on. He's going to score 10 goals. Everyone's going to be excited about it. Kambalius on the wing. You know, it's next DP.
You can't just throw names out there. You at least have to tell us who they play for, man. We're not as deep in this as
this is John Arnold's love.
That's Suriname. That's my guy. But it's going to be interesting, like, because Geraldo Becker isn't.
Right.
I think he'll probably get most of the minutes there, even though the guys that got them here, the Nations League guys, are getting pushed out a little bit. They'll compete for a spot. And I think, like you said, Dave, like, they have a training camp, Suriname does, as we return to our first topic. But, like, they have a training camp, so they'll have a chance to win that spot, those guys who have been there from day one. So, no, look, I mean, there's definitely breakout players in Suriname, but even, like, some of them are playing in Israel, Serbia. Like, these are not necessarily, like, undiscovered players.
Right.
These are guys who are already kind of in the cycle. Trinidad and Tobago, another team who has, like, some talent. Like, you know, you look at, like, Levi Garcia, incredibly known. Judah's brother, maybe not, right? Also playing in India, trying to maybe take a step up or two. I think those are guys who could also potentially help MLS teams, but might be drawing more interest from the European side.
All right, last story from you. Third most interesting story in the Gold Cup.
I think the third most interesting story is what I'll call Central American generational change or Central American transition. You have a lot of these powers that we become used to seeing Costa Rica, Honduras, El Salvador to some extent, although that's another interesting story with the recruitment they've had here in the United States and some in Canada and some in Europe of Salvadoran eligible players, really strengthening what already I think was a pretty established base. But Costa Rica, to me, is the team that's sort of the representation of this. When you look at their roster, there's only four or five players under the age of 24 on this roster. Jimmy Marin is one who will be an attacking player, a dynamic player. But a lot of these guys are still the same guys from 2014 with that magical run. Brian Ruiz is still captaining the team. Celso Borges is still important in the middle. Kendall Waston, Henry Duarte at the back. Keylor Navas isn't there for this tournament, but even then, Esteban Alvarado has been around for quite some time. I think they need, you know, some of the new players, the new faces that we saw at Olympic qualification are not in this roster. Guys like Manfred Ugalde, guys like Jürgen Montenegro. But with that said, even though there maybe is some talent in the pipeline, I think Costa Rica is in a kind of a dangerous time because that generational change isn't coming fast enough. World Cup qualification is right around the corner. And if you have a bad Gold Cup showing, I think that can sort of fall into what happens in September, October. So it's a new manager now after Gonzalez got the axe from losing in Nations League Final Four and then losing to the United States in that final. But Costa Rica hasn't won a game since 2019. Now, a lot of that is because of the pandemic. But I think that, you know, people are kind of letting Costa Rica ride their reputation, and they haven't really shown it lately. So their transition, Honduras's transition, El Salvador's transition, and Panama's transition as well, with a lot of veteran players who should maybe score goals but haven't always been able to actually score goals in competitions like the Gold Cup. Which of those older players actually come through? And if there are some of those young players, like Charlie's asking about, that are able to pop up, that to me is going to be the difference between which Central American teams make a run.
All right, go get CONCACAF. Go subscribe to the newsletter. Follow John on Twitter. Arnold, comma, that's comma, like written out, C-O-M-M-A. John, J-O-N. I know, you know, a lot of ways to spell John in this world. John, give me one team. If the U.S. or Mexico doesn't win this, I don't want any explanation. I just want one team. Who would be the ones that knock the two giants off the perch?
Jamaica.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, I did one explanation.
No, they have the talent. They have the top level world class talent that you need in Leon Bailey. They have players who, you know, at the back, they have players in the Premier League and the Championship. They have Andre Blake, which is always helpful. And I think they have a midfield that, you know, typically, again, Jamaica has been a team where you just see them sort of rely on their talents and not necessarily do too much tactically. But they've added some players who I think can provide that. And there's even some players in the attack who, like, are after Leon Bailey, like Shamar Nicholson, I think is a fantastic player who may be able to make a difference in the tournament like this, who's confident scoring, can find the back of the net. For me, they kind of have all the elements that you need to make a surprise run, and they could be right back in the final where they were in 2015 and 2017.
All right. I always love chatting with you, John. You're at a Holiday Inn Express, so you are an expert on all things. I appreciate you, man. All right. Let's get to the mailbag.
Let's start with Ryan in Juarez, who is clearly a part of this USA-Mexico rivalry, and he says this. Can we say every CONCACAF title and win versus El Tri from now until 2024 is just us playing with house money? This has to be Mexico's last clear-cut Gold Cup to be considered favorites for a long, long time. Once this Gold Cup and round of World Cup qualifying is over, our starting 11 will just be entering prime age with all kinds of international experience while the next wave of talent is following up. CONCACAF will have its new king of the hill. Enjoy this Gold Cup, Mexico, while you can.
Ay, that is fire.
You know, here's the thing for Mexico. These MLS academies are just going to start cranking out these dual nationals, and maybe Mexico just turns north for their talent pipeline.
They already have. I know they Efrain Alvarez. Yeah, Julian. Yeah.
Maybe Julian. Maybe even Ricardo. People were mad about that. Ricardo.
People are mad at us.
Yeah. Debating whether he should be with the U.S. or Mexico. I think we can all agree.
I don't think we debated that.
No, yeah. We want to see him with the U.S. Yeah. But if you're Ricardo Pepi, you have to make the best decision for your career. And maybe it's Mexico.
And you know what's interesting about this is everyone knows when Ricardo Pepi comes home from training, he and his family sit around. They listen to ETR. Exactly. And then they make life decisions based off the inane conversations.
Correct.
That we had.
Not what's best for them in the moment and really playing out their lives and trying to be true to themselves.
Yeah, nothing
only
about
that. What ETR says.
But I respect Ryan for putting the flag in the ground and pushing us forward. We've got another Gold Cup question from James Chelminski, which
Legend.
Is interesting. And he says, it is stunning to me how people are not discussing Qatar being one of the two favorites to win the Gold Cup. Qatar won the Asian Cup, comparable level to CONCACAF, by beating Japan 3-1 in the final. Yes, Japan, the team that took Belgium to the brink of the 2018 World Cup. Also, this U.S. team's not even making the semis. Canada will beat us to the group, and Jamaica or Costa Rica will knock us out. Best case, Mexico.
Oh, man, this guy's just trying to throw out the jinx. He's just trying to throw out the jinx.
Qatar's in Group D with Honduras, Panama, and Grenada. I'm not going to lie. I have not paid any attention at all to the international fortunes of Qatar outside of the fact that the World Cup's going to be there in winter 2022 and that they will be a part of that tournament. I knew they won that tournament, but I haven't watched them. Have either of you? Do you have any thoughts on Qatar?
I watched the Asian Cup a little, and then I think they beat Switzerland in Europe or one of those teams, Belgium, Switzerland, Austria. I don't know. It's all the same, right? They normally sit back and play on the counter, but they are very good at it. And the other thing about them is basically everyone plays for one of two or three clubs in Qatar. So there's a ton of continuity in what they're doing. And you come into an international tournament, especially now post-COVID, where teams haven't been together, teams haven't really played together. And in CONCACAF, where a lot of teams pull talent just for these big moments and these big tournaments, they do have a chance to be the most cohesive group in this competition. And that is what pushed them in the Asian Cup to winning that whole thing. They were not better than Iran when they played them. They were not better than Japan.
Either. You wouldn't say they're favorites in the Gold Cup.
No, but to James's point, Weeby asked outside of the US and Mexico, who could you see win it? None of us brought up Qatar. And I think it's fair to say that they probably, it feels safe they're going to get out of their group. I've been let down by the way Granada's played since Shaari left. They haven't played the same soccer. They don't have the same confidence. Honduras is, because of Weeby's favorite competition, focusing somewhat on the Olympics because it's the most important men's soccer competition in the history of the world.
Oh my God,
world.
We're still doing this?
Yeah, we are. We're back. We're back, baby. All right, can you name a single overage player from any of these countries or the draw? No, because you don't even care.
Oh, by the way, Qatar has played some CONCACAF competition in the last 2 years or so. They drew with Costa Rica in 2020 in November. Weird times, all of that. And then they also, let's see, they beat El Salvador recently here in July. Actually, a couple days ago, apparently, on July 4th.
Yeah, because they came to the U.S.
They have some other big results here. They beat, they beat Croatia. I don't know how good that Croatia squad was in June. They beat or drew Republic of Ireland, etc. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting just to see them up close before 2022. That should be fun.
Yeah.
Anything else? We're getting out of here?
It sucks that you had preliminary games in Miami going into the tournament to try and figure out who makes the tournament, that there's not another CONCACAF team in this competition. I'll just say that up front, but it will be interesting to see what Qatar is. Yeah, we got a ton of love from Charlotte. I don't know how much time we have here.
Sum it up for me. Sum it up. We appreciate our people in the Queen City.
Basically, shout out to Thomas and shout out to Dominic, who just said it was really exciting to hear their team discussed. They've listened to our show for years. They've heard, obviously, other teams broken down, and they said it felt really important and real for them to hear us finally start to break down what they said. They echoed what we said, which is the trans-global nature of their front office makes it interesting who they could bring in. They're excited to see how David Tepper will run this team and push this team. And a lot of excitement again around Miguel Angel Ramirez and what he could do for this club.
Yeah. Shout out to Darius Barnes, also with Charlotte City. Also with Charlotte in the marketing department, former teammate, awesome guy.
MLS employee. We know Darius well.
I think the fan base and the organization understand the culture of the game, and he's going to be someone who's really going to help the club.
Charlotte native, I think Duke grad.
Yeah. He's been mowing you for this mention? Or like, how you guys doing?
I'm just saying. I'm going to get some Charlotte gear. I'm
gonna get hooked up with that.
That's some good Queen City gear.
Personal marketing on Darius's part. But we're happy to have you, Charlotte. It's always exciting to see another city, another community, another soccer city come into Major League Soccer.
One of them closed out their email and said, see you at the Bank of America home opener, because everyone knows Weeby's the opener guy.
Yeah, if you got to march, I'll be there. Now that everything's cleared out, let me talk to Mindy. I'll make sure that I have those days off from the family life, and we'll get that thing done. We'll wrap with that. Big thanks to Hurt Gomez, to John Arnold, to you guys. Of course, tune in pregame on Twitter Spaces, Matt Doyle's account before U.S. national team games in the Gold Cup, and then after the games immediately following, we will be streaming our live reaction experience in this all with you. Gold Cup starts on Saturday.
Why not Gossip Empire? Why are we not doing Goss Empire's account?
I was going to explain this once we got off. Anyone enters a Twitter space, it gets posted to their feed if you follow them, so you don't actually have to say it's Doyle's. feed, like the ETR feed will be in there. Yours will, mine will, but.
And on that note.
Thank you, Charlie, for the promotion.
You now understand Twitter Spaces better than you ever have before. We'll see you there. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll be right back.